The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
AM 1260 The Rock and the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland proudly present Where We Worship. This 30-minute locally produced program highlights Northeast Ohio's Catholic parishes and institutions, their rich histories, and what they do to meet the spiritual needs of those they serve. Now here's your host, Bob Tayak.
Welcome to Where We Worship, a program highlighting parishes and Catholic institutions throughout Northeast Ohio with the intention of offering you insight and understanding on the importance of community in our Catholic faith. And this program sponsored in part by the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland. Well, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops best describes the parish as the place where the church lives. Parishes are communities of faith, of action, and of hope. And they're where the gospel is proclaimed and celebrated. And parishes are the home of the Christian community. They are the heart of the church. And why are they essential to our relationship with God? One only needs to turn to Scripture. In his letter to the Hebrews, St. Paul writes, "We must consider how to rouse one another to live and do good works. We should not stay away from our assembly, as is the custom of some, but encourage one another, and this all the more, as you see the day drawing near." Well, today on Where We Worship, we feature a parish which is not only a venerable institution and centerpiece of an ethnic community, but includes an internationally renowned shrine to one of our modern-day saints. The Shrine Church of St. Stanislaus, located in Cleveland's Slavic Village neighborhood, and just recently observing a 150th anniversary. St. Stan's, as it's been referred to for so many years, also the home of the Shrine to St. Stanislaus and to St. Pope John Paul II, with pilgrims coming from around the world. And for Cleveland's Polish community, as one author wrote, "St. Stanislaus's Cleveland Slavic Village remains a living monument to the faith and generosity of generations of Polish Catholics." This is your host, Bob Tayak, and joining me on Where We Worship, the pastor of St. Stanislaus, Father Eric Orzik, along with parish music director David Krakowski. Father Eric, I almost don't know where to start. There is such a rich and extensive history to St. Stan's, but maybe we should begin with the migration of the Polish people to Cleveland's near south side, 1840s.
Well, thanks, Bob, for having us here with you today. But actually, we're the second migration, because the first one wasn't the industrial workers, it was the skills artisans. You ever heard of St. Adalbert's Parish in Berea?
Sure.
Oldest one in the state of Ohio, and the Poles who went there were stonecutters. Guess what our stone came from that helped build the Shrine Church?
I can imagine.
From the quarries in Berea. So later, during the Industrial Revolution, Cleveland was in the center of all of that, given its prime location and everything. There were not enough workers. So they actually advertised in the foreign nations, and a number of Poles came down, and that's how they began to come to Cleveland in response to the invitation to work in the mills.
Very good. I found it interesting, late 1800s, great expansion, establishment of a school by 1891. Catholic education became a priority, obviously.
Sure, because while things are, Poles are like any other ethnic group, they like to have a home. And so, you had a guest priest coming in to say Mass one time and this over there. They're there, but boy, as soon as you got property, and by the way, we're built on an old potato farm.
That's right. And the beautiful red Gothic structure dates back to, what, 1891?
1891. Yes. Once the parish had its property, the transitional church was a temporary one, a two-story wood structure. That half of it actually still exists.
Really?
It was located in a parking lot between the present church and the present school. When they built the new church, it was cut in half, and half of it was taken across the street, and it's still there. It's a home.
Really?
So amazing. But with the development, 1886, it took 5 years to build the church, which was dedicated in 1891. And it was just a magnificent example of what they called a Polish cathedral style. You know, it's built to impress because the people were poor, but there was nothing too good for God.
And David?
Yeah, and just a note, sure. Even though a lot of people worked at the steel mills at this point, there's not an ounce of steel in the place. It's all wood and brick.
Wow.
It's our attic is the same as Notre Dame in Paris. It's like a wood forest up there, probably about another 30 feet above the ceiling of the church.
And we'll lift that in mind. David, Father, tell us a little bit about the interior of this spectacular space. I mean, it's just an extraordinary place. And I know you have pilgrims coming to visit the shrines. What might be a highlight that they would see?
As soon as they walk in, the interior is really colorful. It's Victorian Gothic, so Victorian in the sense of the architecture, rather Gothic, and Victorian in the sense that it's so colorful. All the flowers on the walls, in the windows, everything is has a meaning. So we have so many statues that I know in the neighborhood, they refer to St. Stanislaus, not as St. Stanislaus sometimes, but as saints. They refer to the church as, because we have so many saints in there. I mean, every pillar has a saint. Every window has saints. They're all over the place. So, but people come in there, they're awed by the high altar, of course, you know. But then, honestly, everyone seems to gravitate towards the shrine of St. John Paul. That's really the main focus of their trip to the pilgrimage.
In fact, we'll talk about that a little bit more coming up. I'd like to very much highlight that. I want to jump back though for a second, Father. You talked about this Polish heritage, and I know that late 1800s, the parish played a major role in the Polish community and with Polish organizations, even national conventions. Tell us a little bit about that heritage, please.
Well, the parish was the center of life. You know, these days in the suburbs, sure, mom and dad are taking the kids to practice and coming back home. Maybe they have a meeting. But it was a little bit different back then. The priest was one of the few educated people in the community. So his office was filled with, you know, he was the judge. He was the arbitrator. He was the lawyer. He was the translator. He was the one who was an advocate on behalf of the people. People came not just to church and pray and devotions, but from the school, they had drama clubs. They had sodalities. They had often orchestras from the parish. They were in parades and uniforms. They had braterstwo. You know, the chalice I use, it's the brotherhood. It was a gift of the brotherhood of the Holy Eucharist. In those days, young men would serve until they got married. Well, they could already be working and get an income. And in 1951, they pitched together and they gave a matching chalice and ciborium to the parish. And it's from the Braterstwo Najświętszy Sakrament, the brotherhood of the Holy Eucharist. That's the kind of stuff, all consuming, dances, events. You know, that it just, it was the center of life.
It surely was. I always like to highlight the role of women religious in the parish as well. Very impactful in this case, particularly. In fact, at one time, there was a convent on campus?
Well, correct. We had a number of convents, actually. The one that was permanent and built for a large number of the Sisters of the Holy Family of Nazareth, Nazaretanki, as they're called in Polish, was torn down a couple years ago. It had been in poor shape. But we purchased the Georgian house across the street from the rectory, which is a grand old home. And that is now the convent for our sisters now. There are two of our sisters, and you ready for this? We now have some African sisters living with them because they're teaching at the high school and another parish. So new life.
New life.
But it's great. The women religious have been the backbone of education.
Surely. When we return, the Shrine Church of St. Stanislaus and its special designation as a shrine on Where We Worship on AM 1260, The Rock. You're listening to Where We Worship on AM 1260, St. Peter, The Rock Radio, with special thanks to the Diocese of Cleveland for support of this program. This is your host, Bob Tayak, with a message for our listeners. Are you a digital subscriber to the weekly email newsletter provided by the Diocese of Cleveland? Right before the weekend begins, the diocese delivers a series of updates and stories from ministries throughout Northeast Ohio, as well as Bishop Edward Mlesick's gospel reflection for that Sunday. Be sure to visit dioceseofcleveland.org and click on the subscriber box that pops onto your screen. And now, as our interview continues with the pastor of St. Stanislaus in Cleveland Slavic Village, Father Eric Orzek, and parish music director David Krakowski. David, I'm going to look to you a little bit because I understand you have a role with the Shrine of St. Stanislaus. Tell us first, how did it come about the church became a shrine to St. Stanislaus and then St. John Paul II?
Okay, it probably started back in 1969. That's when then Cardinal Wojtyla came to visit our church back then, St. Stanislaus Parish. And he presented us with a relic of St. Stanislaus. And we have that relic in the church. We enshrined it. And it became really a space of devotion.
What is the relic?
It's a piece of his bone.
A piece of bone.
Yeah.
Okay.
You see, St. Stanislaus was martyred in 1079. So interesting is both John Paul and St. Stanislaus were both bishops of Kraków, 1,000 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it was he gave it to our church as a in thanksgiving for all the help that the Americans did for Poland during the Second World War.
And then we have St. Stanislaus in place.
Yep.
St. John Paul II. How did that come about?
Well, that would be in 2014, literally days after the canonization of St. John Paul. Cardinal Dziwisz, his former personal secretary, who at that time was the Archbishop of Krakow, made a pastoral visit to the United States and accepted our invitation to come to Cleveland. And he brought with him the first-class relic of St. John Paul. And at the big festive mass that took place, he presented it to Bishop Lennon, who then entrusted it us to our parish in perpetuity for the people of the diocese and beyond to have as a focal point. It's interesting that that particular relic is from the cassock John Paul wore at the time in 1981 of the attempted assassination. So it's the blood-stained part of the cassock. Blood is a part of the body, and therefore, it is a first-class relic.
My goodness, so it is a first-class relic.
It is a first-class relic.
Well, is there also, if I recall correctly, a mitre that was worn?
Yes. When John Paul died in 2005, our pastor at that time, Father Mike Srufka, he had never been to Poland. The two of us went along to Poland, and we went to visit Cardinal Dziwisz, because he was already out of the Vatican now that he was no longer involved with taking care of the next pope. And he went to his, we went to visit him in his palace there, and he brought out this mitre that John Paul used as a bishop, as a cardinal in Kraków, while in Kraków. And we thought he was just showing to us. And here he said, no, this is a gift for your church. Because he remembered coming to St. Stanislaus with Cardinal Wojtyla back in 1969. Mm-hmm. We gave him a whole album of photographs of his visit there. And he remembered that. So we brought it back. And that was the first second-class relic that we had of John Paul.
I'll tell you an interesting thing about those pictures. The entourage that traveled with Cardinal Wojtyla included himself, Father Dziwisz's secretary, and Father Maharski, who was a priest of Krakow. Now, Holy Father gets elected, so he appoints Father Maharski as his successor as the Archbishop of Krakow. When he retires, Pope Benedict appoints then Bishop Dziwisz as his successor to become the Archbishop of Krakow. So every single priest from Poland in that picture became the Cardinal Archbishop of Krakow. Mm. What's the moral of the story I tell all my friends? It's good for priests from Poland to visit our parish.
It surely is. I wondered in our conversation previously, David, you mentioned you do get pilgrims coming from literally around the world that will come to visit
certainly.
The shrine?
Because it's a pretty well-known. It's well-known of the beauty of the church, too. It's got such a history, and people go online and they see our website. They're attracted to it, and they find out that we're very accommodating when the people come. If they want a mass, they can have a mass. If they just want to sit in quiet, they can do that. We have people that come in just singing all kinds of languages. That's the idea of a shrine has to be open to all this, not just limiting to like one language, one ethnicity. It's open to everybody.
I mean, you'll even do tours as well?
Oh, constantly.
Not a week goes by that a bus doesn't come by.
Really?
At least one bus, yeah.
Wow. Didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump a little bit here because I want to. We're in the Christmas season, and David, I'm looking at you because music is such an important element and traditional element to Polish worship, if you will, and so forth. Tell us about, for instance, just in this season, what you have going on.
Beginning with Advent, we have so many songs for Advent at Mass. We'll just sing, of course, aside from the Kyrie and Sanctus in Polish, we'll have Advent hymns, but we have so many, we have to be really picky about which ones we're going to use during the Mass, because we never want to repeat, for one thing, because there's just a lot to choose from. So we'll use those throughout the service. And even our concerts that we have in December, they're not Christmas concerts. Like, for example, City Music's going to be there on December 9th. It's Beethoven. It's serious music, but we don't go into this Christmas carol stuff yet. That does not start until December 24th at the 5 o'clock Mass, and then at midnight, the midnight Mass, which is actually at midnight.
So
our midnight Mass starts at midnight.
Right.
Believe me, those two Masses, the church is packed more than any other Masses during the year. And we sing all the Christmas carols. They're called Kolędy and Pastoralki in Polish and English too. And midnight Mass, for example, we try to focus on the shepherds. So there's songs that we do at midnight that you're not going to hear the rest of the season.
Hmm.
But there are so many to begin with that we don't have to repeat anyway. But it's a tradition in a Polish tradition that, for example, like a Gloria is going to be a Christmas carol. This Holy Holy is a Christmas carol. Believe me, we go from Christmas Eve until February 2nd, and we don't repeat any carols.
And so, you don't repeat them.
There's so many,
so many. Do you have any special concerts that your choir or any during the season?
People simply come. The midnight is the big one because we have so many Masses. Mm-hmm. Everyone's spread out. It's important to have cantors at every Mass. So.
Usually we have the follow-up, if you want to call it that, on the Feast of the Epiphany. Mm-hmm. And we'll have the brass, the timpani, and all of that out. And a lot of people, if, say, they weren't able to come at Christmas or their obligations took them elsewhere, make a point of coming for that. Matter of fact, I believe second year in a row, we're going to have at the 11:30 Mass in Epiphany a big group coming from St. Barnabas Parish in Northfield.
Oh, very good.
Just because they've adopted that day, and here they all show up in force.
Amen.
Christmas and the Epiphany. Epiphany is technically the more important of the two.
Of the two,
I know. So we go all out on the Epiphany, too.
Coming up, St. Stanislaus, since 1873, serving the faithful with active ministries on AM 1260, The Rock. You're listening to Where We Worship, featuring the Shrine Church of St. Stanislaus in Slavic Village, now observing its 150th anniversary on AM 1260, The Rock. And my guests are St. Stanislaus Pastor, Father Eric Orzek, and Parish Director of Music, David Krakowski. And I want to jump back real quickly and look at these Christmas traditions. And they go far beyond music, Father, but we're talking liturgies, foods, and even other recognitions?
Well, sure. Again, for the Polish tradition, Christmas Eve is the most important day of the year. And so it's taken very seriously. The food preparation, according to the old custom, is meatless. Now, that doesn't mean it's not good or plentiful. It just means there's no meat. It's
right.
Usually an odd number of dishes, and it's a ceremonial layout. Doesn't start until night, and usually you get the little ones out of the way by they're in charge of seeing the first star. And when they report the first star, then you can eat any time after that. You know?
Great tradition.
Yeah, and it continues with the breaking of the opłatki, which is the wafer where you share fellowship. But you wish each other well, reconciliations happen, and good health and peace in the new year. And then you sit down to this meal, and it is a veritable feast in many courses. Always includes singing of the Kolędy, like we've talked about. And traditionally, after that, everyone goes to the pasterka, which is the midnight Mass.
And also, one other thing is at the table, there's always a chair, an empty seat.
Yes, right.
For the people that have died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or people that might just show up, too.
<That's>
we've all done that before. People want a place to go, and you have an extra seat. they're welcome to it, because you've had it already reserved for your grandparents, for your parents. Everyone's still there on Christmas Eve.
Amen. Very good. Other Polish feast days traditions that are recognized throughout the church year at St. Stanislaus, Father?
Well, we can start off with the church year. So during Advent, we sing the little Godzinki, the little office of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Anyone's familiar with that prayer, it is all about Advent.
Yeah.
Okay? And from there, we go into the Christmas things we've spoken about. Fast forward to February 2nd, the Feast of the Presentation. Well, that's a big occasion of blessing the candles. And David, tell me about this special candle.
It's called the Gromnica. It's like I've got my grandmother still. It's a candle that you lit at the home for two reasons. One might be when the priest came to give communion to someone that was maybe sick, or for the final rites. But also during the storms, you always lit the candle during the storm to protect the house.
Wow.
And this is blessed on Candlemas Day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And from that, you flow to, it's usually then Lent, and the singing of the Bitter Lamentations called Gorzkie Żale, beautiful, haunting melody that, I haven't seen a translation yet that does it justice, it's a beautiful thing. And Easter time, during Holy Week, there's a... tell them how our palms are a little bit different than most people's.
So we, instead of just palms in the church, as in Poland, they use pussy willows. So we have pussy willows lining the aisles, and people take them home and they include them with their palms, because
right.
they'll get a palm, of course, to take home.
Sure.
But pussy willows, those are the symbols of Palm Sunday and of Easter, too.
Because in that part of the world, palms don't grow. And before shipping and handling came in, you used what you had.
Right? Sure.
And from then, Holy Saturday, the blessing of the food baskets, very popular.
Right.
We do, 10, 11, 12, 1, and 2. And oftentimes, the church is packed.
Wow.
Packed.
Wow.
Okay. And it smells like kielbasa.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. There's usually ham and kielbasa involved there. And
garlic.
That's why we have to use incense.
That's very good.
Easter, particular to the Polish tradition, is?
Oh, the Resurrexia. That's the Mass early in the morning. Without that, it's like midnight Mass for Christmas. So the 6 a.m. Mass at our church, 6:30 a.m., is when you have a procession outside of the church, go around the church three times with the Blessed Sacrament and with the Easter candle and with the statue of the risen Christ. That's the beginning of Easter. We know that it actually technically starts on Holy Saturday, but in Polish tradition, it starts also very early in the morning on Easter Sunday.
Easter Sunday.
And then there's May devotions for Mary, June devotions for the Sacred Heart, August.
Corpus Christi
with the procession through the neighborhood, to the four altars. August 15th, the Assumption, walking pilgrimages happen in Poland, but people come to have the blessing of the flowers and the herbs. And because in our tradition, it's the Assumption, but in the Eastern tradition, it's the Dormition, we actually have a statue of Mary in Dormition. And afterwards, we sing the hymn of goodnight to Mary, and our people do what?
They cover the statue with rose petals, because the tradition was that when the apostles went to see the body of Mary, there was nothing there, just rose petals. So she's covered in rose petals as we sing goodnight to her.
I want to jump in here as we're getting tight on time. But nevertheless, I always ask this question to the pastors we interview about young people in this day and age, in this culture, and how you try to reach them. And one of the things that caught my eye was in your bulletin, you have a Polish language school, for instance, at St. Stanislaus.
Correct. Now, the first part of the question is, I'd say the last few decades, people are maturing later, and they all seem, the youth, to go through this period, regardless of what their background is, of a fading away, a dropping out. And then when life catches up with them, they look for some foundation and everything. Our approach is very simple. The Polish family is a very important unit. And so we just, when they're young, they come to church together. And they find something in that, so that when it's time for them to come back, the family will still be there. If not their immediate family or their own family, their parish family. So it's a family-based outreach. Now, the Polish language school is actually not our parish school, but the number of Polish fraternal organizations sponsor Polish cultural and language schools, and we allow them to use our facilities. So they teach one of them, the 100-some kids, but they have language, reading, dancing, some of the folk troupes that you might see at various cultural events and everything, practice in our facilities there. And that's a way of, again, bringing the people in, but also making the larger Polish community also a part of our parish community.
Father Eric Orzech and David Krakowski, thank you for being with us. As you've been listening to Where We Worship, this is your host, Bob Tayak. This presentation featuring the Shrine Church of St. Stanislaus in Cleveland's Slavic Village. Where We Worship is a production of AM 1260 St. Peter the Rock Radio, focusing on the essential aspect of community worship and participation in our Catholic faith, as written in the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 2. Prayer as a community is essential for our spiritual growth and personal well-being. God does not intend for us to bear our crosses alone.
Thank you for listening to Where We Worship with host Bob Tayak, presented by AM 1260 The Rock and the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen to the program in its entirety by going to our website, am1260therock.com, and clicking the On Demand tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.